Hello and welcome to Volume 46, Number 14 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 3rd of April, 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Desney, who's joined by daughter Gemma and granddaughter Rebecca. Yes, it's a real family Easter. And in the news this week, the Borough Council misses the waste deadline, or should that be waistline. More security CCTV cameras have appeared, and two more holes are to appear in Galston. And I must apologise for omitting to mention last week that we're online only for this week. I wish they'd stop moving Easter about. Ho-hum. Right, no news in brief this week, as most stories are quite short, both in size and quantity. But we do have two birthdays. The first one, as we welcome new listener John Baldry to the fold, is for him, with our best wishes for a good day on Easter Sunday the 5th. And similar very best wishes to Leslie Millard, who celebrates on Easter Monday. We hope that you both have great days. Okay, it's time for the first part of the news. So over to Desney, Gemma and Rebecca.
Hello, this is Desney and I've got the rest of the family here. We've got...
Well, not all of them.
No, not all of them. I've got my daughter Gemma.
Hi.
And my granddaughter Rebecca, who may or may not join in. With the first item of news, which is JPH Miss Pregnancy. A young woman and her unborn baby died after medics failed to check if she was pregnant during four trips to A&E, a court has heard. Zoe Ty had gone to the James Paget Hospital on four occasions over a 6 weeks period, complaining of lower abdominal pain. She was treated for a recurring urinary tract infection, UTI, but medics did not carry out a pregnancy test on the 22-year-old who did not know she was expecting. Just over a fortnight later, she collapsed at home and was taken by ambulance to hospital, where she was diagnosed with sepsis. Finally, a scan revealed she was 14 weeks pregnant, although the baby had already died as a result of the infection. Miss Ty, who worked as a beauty therapist and nail technician, was transferred to the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital, where she died having suffered three cardiac arrests shortly after giving birth. An inquest into her death, held at Norfolk Coroner's Court this week, has raised questions over whether lives could have been saved if her pregnancy had been detected earlier. Speaking to Area Coroner Joanna Thompson, the legal representative for Miss Ty's family, said one of the questions is whether there being no pregnancy testing performed has altered the flow of events at all, and whether not performing the pregnancy test has caused or materially contributed to Zoe's death. Pregnancy tests ought to have been performed on several occasions at the JPH. The hearing was told that she was admitted to the JPH emergency department on April the 24th, May the 22nd, June the 2nd and June the 7th, 2023. It was initially thought she had been experiencing a UTI as a result of repeated and prolonged ketamine misuse. In a statement read to the court, Miss Ty's mother, Jane Ty, explained how her daughter had been unwell for some time, having used the drug from the age of 17 following the death of her father. Ketamine is a powerful anaesthetic used in human and veterinary medicine, which, when misused, can cause serious long-term bladder problems. Mrs. Ty described how her daughter had been diagnosed with bladder fibrosis, known as ketamine bladder, and suffered from frequent UTIs. 4 months before her death, Miss Ty had returned to her home in Lowestoft, determined to get better, following 3 months in rehab in Weston-super-Mare in Somerset. Mrs. Ty, who was dedicated to supporting her daughter, said she had everything to live for, a promising career, secure and loving home, and a nice boyfriend. Unfortunately, after returning home, her physical health was still very poor, and she was in extreme pain all of the time. She found the only thing that gave her temporary relief was ketamine, which led her to relapse. The court heard that the pain was so severe it resulted in her becoming wheelchair-bound and suicidal on occasion. Mrs. Ty said this meant she had many visits to the emergency department at the JPH, where she claims her daughter was barely looked at. She was just sent home with very basic painkillers and or antibiotics for the UTI, which plainly didn't work at all, she said. I honestly feel that anyone who saw her at James Paget simply didn't look beyond her ketamine issue. They were just not interested in investigating if anything else was wrong. They just kept saying they couldn't do anything for her. I asked for scans and begged for her to be admitted, as she was in so much pain and so frail, but I was frankly ignored. On June 24th, Miss Ty collapsed on the floor at home. Her mother called for an ambulance and she was taken to the JPH A&E, by this time incredibly unwell and critically ill. She was diagnosed as suffering with sepsis, and it was then that a scan revealed she was pregnant, something described as a huge shock to everyone, but that the baby had already died. Mrs. Ty added, the consultant who assisted to deliver him at the Norfolk and Norwich the next day was able to confirm that it had only been a recent death. She could not understand why James Paget had never done a routine pregnancy test on any of Zoe's visits, as she said this would be standard with any young woman presenting at A&E with lower abdominal pain, even if they didn't think they were pregnant. Within hours of giving birth, Miss Ty suffered from 3 cardiac arrests, after which it was decided to withdraw treatment. She died at the NNN on June the 26th. Miss Ty's provisional medical cause of death has been given as sepsis due to E. coli, urinary tract infection and missed miscarriage, with a contributing factor of ketamine misuse.
A local salon has scooped a national award for a second year in a row. The Hair Base in Galston was named Best Local Salon by the Hair Magazine Awards, marking back-to-back wins for the business. Now in its 26th year, the business has earned praise for its community-focused approach and welcoming atmosphere. Emma Jarvis, who founded the Hair Base at the age of 19, said the award means everything because it reflects what we do every single day. We've built this over 26 years by putting our clients first, staying consistent and never cutting corners. The salon operates with a fully employed team, offering stability, structure and long-term career development, something it claims sets it apart in a changing industry.
2 men have been arrested after police search found bags of cannabis. Officers carried out raids at properties in Primrose Way in Bradwell, where cannabis, quantities of cash, mobile phones and scales were all seized. The 2 men in their 20s were arrested on suspicion of being concerned in the supply of a controlled drug. Both men were taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning and later released on bail while inquiries continue.
A major DIY chain with several stores in Norfolk has announced it is closing a string of locations. Topps Tiles has said it will shut the doors to 23 of its shops. The Leicestershire-based firm said the closure, 7% of its 319-strong estate, will help slash costs as part of significant self-help measures. Bosses said the stores are underperforming, with 8 already closed since last September and the remainder set to shut over the next 6 months. Topps Tiles currently runs 6 stores in Norfolk, and earlier this year the retailer confirmed it would close its Great Yarmouth store in May. It's not yet clear if any of the other Norfolk premises will be impacted. Thomas Tiles' chief executive, Alex Jensen, said, in light of subdued consumer sentiment and geopolitical uncertainty, as well as the cumulative impact of cost inflation, the management team is implementing a targeted programme of self-help measures weighted towards the second half. These actions are designed to support year-on-year profit growth and provide a stronger financial platform for 2027 and beyond.
The latest dates for Hazardous Waste Amnesty Days in TIPS in Norfolk have been announced. The events will take place at 7 recycling centres this spring and are organised by Norfolk County Council. The amnesties allow people to dispose of hazardous household waste free of charge, including items such as aerosols, antifreeze, drain cleaners, fertilisers, paint and weed killer. Those wanting to dispose of any of these items will have to book ahead online or over the phone with the council. Booking opens 8 days before each event. The council introduced the controversial money-making booking system for its recycling centres in November 2024. It was created to prevent queues at such events and was used for the first time for hazardous household wastes in spring last year. The dates for the local caster facilities are Friday, May the 8th and Saturday, May the 9th.
A major Norfolk road was closed in the run-up to rush hour after a lorry jackknifed. The A47 Acle Strait was closed both ways between the A1064 Acle roundabout and the A149 Braden Bridge from around 6 a.m. on Wednesday. Drivers were told to expect delays and find alternative routes. The A47 Acle Strait was closed overnight to repair work and reportedly the lorry was trying to turn around in the roadworks. According to the National Highways, it reopened during the morning.
Plans to build up to 49 new homes in Martham have taken a significant step forward. Mr Patel has applied for outline planning permission for the demolition of Martham East Broiler Farm and the redevelopment of the site for up to 49 homes. The proposal has now been recommended for approval by planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council, subject to conditions. The application site, covering an area of 2.36 hectares, is located to the south of Martham and consists of the broiler buildings and bungalow, infrastructure and associated land. Alongside the new dwellings, the proposal would also involve the redevelopment of associated public open space, drainage and infrastructure. It would seek to take access from the northwest corner of the site from Acacia Avenue. This is the same point of access previously approved in an application for up to 55 dwellings on the site in 2017, although this planning permission has since elapsed. Norfolk County Council, as local highway authority, did not object to the proposed principle of residential development. A Development Management Committee meeting is scheduled to take place regarding the application on Wednesday, April the 8th, in Great Yarmouth Town Hall.
A garage and dealership in Ludham Village could be turned into a site for several homes under new plans. Nick Clark, who works at Ludham Garage Limited, has applied for planning permission in principle to convert the garage into space for up to 9 homes. He has lodged an application with North Norfolk District Council seeking outline planning permission for the development of up to 9 residential dwellings. The dwellings are proposed to be affordable homes. The application states the exact type of housing development would be in the hands of the buyer of the site. The site measuring 1.22 hectares, we had a bit of a row about how we say that word, sorry, is currently used for car sales and MOT testing and has a workshop, forecourt and car park. The business currently employs 5 full-time workers and 2 part-time workers. No employees would remain on the site if the application was approved.
A lifeboat station supporter has celebrated her 100th birthday by completing 70 years of volunteering. Helen Daniels is a volunteer for RNLI Great Yarmouth and Gorleston Lifeboat and reached 100 on Thursday. She has been volunteering with the Lifeboat Guild and raising money for the station since 1956. A Facebook post from the lifeboat station said, "She works tirelessly to raise money to help keep our lifeboats saving lives at seas. Helen is still a very active member of the fundraising guild and we thank her for her service so far and wish her a very happy birthday from all the crew."
That was a nice story, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A new bar and grill restaurant has opened in Galston after months of work behind the scenes. Tipsy Grill has welcomed its first customers to their venue on the High Street. The restaurant is now serving its grilled chicken, pizza, pasta and smash burgers after getting the green light to open. Staff are also making their cocktails and serving a wide variety of beers and wine on site. It completes a long journey for the business whose owners acquire the premises located next to the Iceland supermarket in August 2024. Since then, they have been working behind the scenes to bring something different to the town's food and drink scene. Ahead of opening, Kiri Mahadevan, joint owner of the Tipsy Grill, said, "I always felt we have these bars in London, and it is more of a restaurant for family gatherings. We went for this bar kind of idea, thought we would try at this and give back to the locals. Now it has opened and is also serving some Sri Lankan starters, including fish cutlet and steak rolls, to honour the two owners' Sri Lankan heritage. The restaurant and bar is open from 12 p.m. to 12 a.m. every day of the week. People are being advised to make a booking to secure a table, but walk-ins are now being accepted, subject to availability."
The Care Quality Commission, the CQC, has increased the rating of maternity services at the James Paget University Hospital from inadequate to requires improvement. The rating of the Galston Hospital overall has been upgraded from requires improvement to good. It comes after the CQC carried out an unannounced inspection at the hospital on September 16, 2025, following up on concerns identified at the previous inspection in January 2023. The CQC found improvements at this inspection, but said they needed to be embedded and sustained. Inspectors found that the service now has a fully established leadership team following a period of instability. According to the report, there is a genuine culture of safety and learning, and that staff are confident to raise concerns, with incidents investigated thoroughly. It said women spoke positively about the care they received and said that they felt involved in the decisions about their care. It found women were seen promptly in triage, with the highest priority cases seen immediately, and 91% of urgent cases reviewed by a doctor within 15 minutes. However, it said improvements needed to be made to the maternity services bereavement support, dedicated triage phone line and record-keeping processes. Jonathan Gardner, Executive Managing Director at James Paget Hospital, said, "We are pleased that the commitment to putting the needs of mothers, babies and families at the core of our maternity services has been recognised through the CQC's inspection report. Since the outcomes of the inspection in 2023, our maternity department and the whole hospital has responded to improve the services we provide for people giving birth to their babies. We will now focus on the additional actions we can take to continue to improve maternity care and the wider quality and safety of our services."
Never saw you look quite so pretty before. Never saw you dress quite so handsome, what's more. I could hardly wait to keep our days this lovely Easter morning. And my heart beat fast as I came through the door. Us over will walking to the Easter parade.
On the avenue, Fifth Avenue, the photographers will snap us, and you'll find that you're in the road of gravure.
A nod to Easter there from Judy Garland and Fred Astaire. Well, more news in just a while, but first, do you recognise this? Well, that was a piece by Paganini, or Page Nine, as I always want to call him, entitled Moto Perpetuo, which I think is Italian for perpetual motion, which is the original of the piece that we use for the theme to Grapevine Extra, which is entitled Gossipo Perpetuo, which I assume means perpetual talking. I play that in full to precede Disney's TV talk in honour of the three ladies, whose recordings today needed a little more editing than normal. It was fun, though. The rest of the news follows Disney.
Right, now here's a few things you might like to watch or listen to during the coming week. Firstly, you may remember that Andrew and I were lucky enough to interview Paul Hayes from BBC Radio Norfolk a few weeks ago. We talked about his contributions to BBC Sounds before, and this week another one went up. Now, if you're accessing this week's edition of Grapevine over Easter, you will be getting it online only, because posting things out and getting them back in a week when there are two bank holidays is very difficult, both for us and for Royal Mail. So if you're online, you can find BBC Sounds on your computer, your iPad, or even a smartphone, and then you can search for Paul Hayes or the name of his documentary, which is Flight into Danger. Flight into Danger. It's a documentary which is about 20 minutes long, and it's written and created by Paul, and Paul narrates the story, of course. It's the story of Arthur Haley, who is a man from Luton, and he's a former fighter pilot and from World War II. And he thought up a story while he was on a plane to Canada, a what would happen if story. And he wrote it as a play, which he eventually sent to the TV studio, CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Company. And it arrived on Sidney Newman's desk. It arrived in January, and in April, at the beginning of April, it was put on air. So as I read this, I'm going to say tomorrow, that will be 70 years ago. You might be able to listen to this on its 70th anniversary. Well, he was propelled into fame because that play on television was so successful. And that started his very successful writing career. You may even have seen books by him, talking books as well. So if you want to give that a go, I thoroughly recommend it. Now, just a look at some of the programmes that you can see on TV over the weekend, particularly over the weekend, but through the week, obviously. This time, it's time for the annual boat race. That's the big sporting event in the Radio Times this week. Now, 99 years ago, in 1927, was the first radio broadcast of this event. But this year, for the first time, you won't find it on the BBC at all. It's on Channel 4. But just to make you feel at home, you'll get the familiar voices of Claire Balding and Addy Adebitan, and you've heard them on the BBC before. They'll be there to tell you all about it, and the programme runs from 1.30 to 4.30, with the women's boat race at 2.21 even, and the men's at 3.21. And the BBC will follow this up, because they haven't got the boat race, with a live football match, an FA Cup quarter-final between Chelsea and Port Vale, who are League One. Well, we all know who should be expected to win, but you never know with the FA Cup. The kick-off is at 5.15. By the time this online-only edition of Grapevine is available on Friday evening or Saturday morning, Norwich will have played their Easter Good Friday match, home game against Portsmouth. They've got an away match on Easter Monday, but their next big match will be against our Suffolk rivals, that's Ipswich, of course, at Carrow Road on Saturday the 11th of April. They kick off early at 12.30, and of course BBC Radio Norfolk will cover this from 12 noon, and I suspect with Chris Gorham commentating. I don't think he'd miss that one. Just a couple more programmes highlighted by Radio Times. On Easter Day, there is Secret Garden at 6pm on BBC One. It's the start of a five-part series narrated by David Attenborough, who is about to celebrate his 100th birthday, as you know, and celebrating the nation's back gardens and wildlife that they support. So not lions and tigers, I hope. Starting off in Oxfordshire this time, there are five programmes in the series. So for the next 5 weeks, David Attenborough will be entertaining you with back gardens. On 9pm on BBC Two, there is a new series in three parts, and these parts just take place at Easter Sunday, Easter Monday and on Tuesday, all at 9 o'clock, and the programme is called Pilgrimage, The Road to Holy Island. And seven celebrities with different faiths and beliefs embark on a spectacular trek through the wild landscapes of northeast England, from the dramatic clifftop ruins of Whitby Abbey and ending on the holy island of Lindisfarne. The celebrities include Ashley Banjo, who found fame as leader of the dance group Diversity, and the actor Hermione Norris, who's fondly remembered as one of the stars of Cold Feet back in the day. And there's also Tasha Gourie, who most recently I saw, anyway, I don't know about the rest of you when you most recently saw her, but she was on Strictly in 2024. And then there's Patsy Kensit. She's an actress, singer and model, and she is also in the programme. I think she first found fame. Oh, I remember her as a little girl in the Bird's Eye Frozen Peas advert. OK, that's all for now. Thank you.
A long-serving housekeeper who worked at a Norfolk hospital for more than 20 years has retired. Debbie Wicks has pulled down the curtain on her career after more than 21 years of service at the James Paget University Hospital in Goulston. Her colleagues on Ward 4 at the hospital organised a special retirement party to bid her a fond farewell. She started at the hospital as a healthcare assistant, working in the role for 8 years before becoming a housekeeper. She is now looking forward to her retirement to spend time with her grandchildren, gardening and bingo.
We're off to see The Wizard by the Sea. The Wizard of Oz will run for 8 shows during the May half term at the Britannia Pier Theatre in Great Yarmouth. It marks the venue's first major multi-performance professional production in more than a decade. The cast includes 32 young performers from the area, selected earlier this year to join the ensemble. Ryan Holt, executive producer of the show and originally from Lowestoft, said, "I'm incredibly excited to be bringing this production to such a wonderful venue. I remember visiting the pier frequently as a child and have very fond memories of watching the Chuckle Brothers perform there. So it feels very special to now be bringing a production of my own to the stage, especially with it being the first major production." Mr. Holt brings more than 12 years of experience staging pantomimes and theatre productions across the UK. The show tells the classic tale of Dorothy, who is swept from Kansas to the Land of Oz and travels the yellow brick road to meet the mysterious wizard, joined by Scarecrow, Tin Man and Cowardly Lion. Shay McDade, venue manager at Britannia Pier Theatre, said, "We're excited to see the production burst onto the stage this May half term and to be able to offer families this magical show to enjoy during the school holidays. It's fantastic to host a production that also gives young local performers the opportunity to appear on the Britannia Pier stage. The cast features Maisie Wilde as Dorothy, Kimberly Mason as Glinda, Tia Hyson as the Wicked Witch of the West, Michael Heslop as the Scarecrow, Luke Drule as the Tin Man, and Aaron Spendelow as the Lion. It runs from May the 28th to May the 31st. Tickets start from £12.50 and are available at www.britannia-pier.co.uk.
Council miss food waste deadline. Every Norfolk council that was asked to introduce weekly food waste collections by today has failed to meet the government's deadline, despite receiving a combined £6.16 million in grants to fund the transition. Breckland, South Norfolk, North Norfolk and Great Yarmouth were all instructed to offer residents a separate food waste collection service by March the 31st. It comes as new government guidelines require all councils across the country to offer the new measures, in what has been described as one of the biggest shake-ups to recycling policy in England in 20 years. Nationally, the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, handed out more than £340 million in grants to help councils make the switch. For Norfolk Council alone received more than £6 million of that pot, yet none managed to meet the deadline. Norwich City, Broadland and West Norfolk Council have already been operating the scheme for an extended period and received a minimal amount of financial support. Breckland, South Norfolk, North Norfolk and Great Yarmouth all point to the same reason as to why they missed the deadline, however. They claim the national rush to mask kit for special food waste vehicles, with hundreds of authorities placing orders simultaneously, overwhelmed the manufacturers. Great Yarmouth, which has held Norfolk's worst recycling rate for more than a decade, says it won't have its fleet fully prepared until January 2027. A spokesman added that delays in government funding also compounded the council's struggles. Breckland and South Norfolk are targeting to launch food waste recycling by summer and September, respectively, while North Norfolk expects to begin in February next year. Norfolk councils also argue the country's rural character makes the new waste collection difficult, and some have questioned the legitimacy of the scheme in less sparsely populated parts of the county. One council spokesman says that in rural areas, lorries are having to travel miles between collections, meaning fuel and operational costs may outweigh the environmental benefits.
Handmade octopus creations are being sold in memory of a beloved sister. The wool creations are being sold at the Pavilion Theatre in Goulston. Maggie, a volunteer and familiar face in the community, channels her creativity into delicate designs, each a tribute to her sibling and a symbol of the ongoing struggle many families face due to Alzheimer's. Her heartfelt initiative not only celebrates and uplifts the significance of the Alzheimer's Society's vital work, but it also fosters a sense of togetherness and unity within the community. The octopus creations help bring together makers, supporters and buyers for a shared purpose, fundraising and spreading awareness for a worthy cause. Through her work, Maggie offers visitors an opportunity to be part of something meaningful. Each purchase from the Pavilion Theatre signifies support for Maggie's mission.
The local Pride organisation has been named Pride Organisation of the Year at the Gaydio Pride Awards 2026. Great Yarmouth and Waveney Pride, GYW Pride, received the honour backed by the London Women's Clinic for its outstanding contribution to the LGBTQ+ community. The award recognises the group's work in delivering inclusive events and championing equality across the Great Yarmouth and Waveney area. GYW Pride was praised for its efforts to create safe, celebratory spaces that unite the community. The GYW Pride Organisation Committee said, "This award is a testament to the hard work, passion and love that our entire team, volunteers, sponsors and community put into everything we do. To be recognised nationally by Gaydio is truly overwhelming. This isn't just our trophy, it belongs to everyone who has supported us, marched with us and stood alongside us. We are so proud to represent our region and will continue to strive for a world where everyone feels accepted and celebrated." The award coincided with the launch of GYW Pride's newest initiative, the Limitless Voices Project. The project shares personal stories from LGBTQ+ individuals and allies in Great Yarmouth, exploring the effects of rising transphobic and xenophobic rhetoric on the community. The GYW Pride Organisation Committee said, "Launching the Limitless Voices project on the same day feels incredibly meaningful. While we celebrate our achievements, we also recognise the challenges many in our community face every day. These stories matter. They humanise the debate and remind us why our work is so vital. With new stories released every Friday, we hope this project encourages empathy, sparks conversation, and helps create a safer, kinder place for everyone." The award and project mark a significant step in GYW Pride's growing influence within the national Pride movement.
An intrepid duo will be taking a leap of faith later this year as they look to raise funds for a village football club. Jareth Hawkins and Simon Griffiths will take on a 10,000-foot skydive for the Hopton Harriers FC. Both are committee members at the club that was established in March 2020. They are aiming to raise funds to ensure that every single player in Hopton Harriers FC has the best possible experience at its ground at Hopton Recreational Field in Lowestoft Road, Hopton. Mr Hawkins, who is manager of the under-7 Stingrays, and Mr Griffiths, the vice-chairman and groundsman, will be making the jump on July 25th. The GoFundMe page was set up by the Grassroots Club last month and it has raised £120 with 11 donations pledged. It said, "We pride ourselves on being a place where everyone can play football and your donations help us keep that mission alive. We are raising funds to ensure that every single player at Hopton Harriers FC has the best possible experience from their very first kick at Little Penguins to their development and competitive matches. Donations pledged will support sessions for children with special educational needs and disabilities, as well as improved training equipment and go towards the refurbishment of the facilities."
Plans to build new golf course holes to replace those at risk from coastal erosion have taken a significant step forward. A proposal to create two new golf holes on land west of Galston Golf Club has been recommended for approval, subject to conditions. Howard Thornton, club president of Galston Golf Club, applied for planning permission to change the use of 6.39 hectares of agricultural land to create two additional golf holes. The two new golf holes would replace two of the existing holes, which are part of the current 18-hole course. Holes 4 and 5 are located close to the North Sea-facing cliff and suffering from the effects of coastal erosion. The proposal seeks to address the impending loss of these holes and reorganise the course, with the two proposed holes located away from the current coastal erosion threat. Only two of the current holes are located inland, with much of the current course located with an area identified as being at risk from the sea. These two holes would be given up and two new holes created inland, increasing the area of the golf club. Despite the increased area, it would remain an 18-hole golf course. Furthermore, the proposed development would involve landscaping the greens and tee boxes serving the planned golf holes would be created. The report says the additional holes are required to secure the long-term future of the club and to mitigate the impacts of coastal erosion on the existing course. It is considered an appropriate form of rollback development and would protect the club as a viable business, sports facility and community facility. The local highway authority and Hopton Parish Council raised no objection to the plans. A development management committee meeting is scheduled to take place regarding the proposal on Wednesday, April the 8th.
A fish and chip shop just a stone's throw away from the beach has hit the market for £649,000. Winterton Fish and Chips, which sits in Beach Road, Winterton-on-Sea, is being marketed by Paul Hubbard Commercial. The Chippy has been running for more than 30 years and has earned a good reputation among locals and tourists alike. According to the agents, the business has a proven year-on-year growth. The food preparation area was recently extensively upgraded and the business is also tech savvy with its own purpose-built ordering app, which offers a loyalty scheme and has 3,000 customers on its database. On the site, there is a 3-bed owner's accommodation with a private garden, garage and off-road parking. A spokesman for Paul Hubbard Commercial said, "Trade is supported year-round, with Winterton-on-Sea attracting visitors beyond the summer months, including winter tourism driven by the area's well-known sea colony and coastal walks."
A Grade 2 listed barn ripe for conversion is set to go under the hammer. Church Farm Barns on Flegborough Road in Rollsbury, Great Yarmouth, is up for sale on an online auction on May 7th. The property, which is expected to fetch £160,000 to £180,000 plus fees, sits in a 0.75 off an acre of land. The site also includes an 8-bay cart lodge, which was damaged by the fire, and the foundations of another barn, which could both, subject to planning permission, be developed along with the main barn. It is being marketed by Auction House East.
Government is to consult on banning trail hunting amid concerns it has been used as a smokescreen for illegal fox hunting. Baroness Hayman, the Animal Welfare Minister, said it would be the first step to delivering the legislation to fulfil Labour's manifesto commitment to ban trail hunting. She said the nature of trail hunting makes it difficult to ensure wild and domestic animals are not put at risk of being killed or injured. That is clearly unacceptable. We understand that this is a complex issue, and so we are seeking views from everyone with an interest to help shape how we bring this forward. Anti-hunting groups say there have been thousands of incidents involving hunts breaking the law since pursuing a live quarry with hounds was banned by the 2005 Hunting Act. Prosecutions are rare, but include two members of the West Norfolk Hunt who were found guilty of allowing hounds to hunt foxes by Great Yarmouth magistrates in July 2024. Both were fined £500 and ordered to pay costs of £1,200. The pair subsequently appealed, but this was rejected after a two-day hearing before a judge at Norwich Crown Court in October of that year. The court heard witness evidence and CCTV footage about an incident on February the 23rd, 2024, when 38 hounds entered a garden in Hingham and killed a fox, with both men present and in charge of the pack. Labour pledged in its manifesto to ban trail hunting, a practice in which an animal-based scent is laid across the countryside for hounds and riders to follow. Trail hunting grew in popularity as an alternative to fox hunting, which was banned more than 20 years ago. Launching the consultation, officials said there was an inherent risk of dogs picking up the scent of live, wild mammals, such as foxes and hares, and pursuing and killing them instead of following the trail. Concerns persist that trail hunting can be used as a smokescreen to facilitate illegal hunting, as it helps obscure any intention to hunt wild mammals with dogs, the Environment Department DEFRA said. Under the plans, which would apply to England and Wales, other activities such as drag hunting, in which a non-animal scent is laid, or clean boot hunting, where the hounds follow the scent of a human runner, would remain legal. The Countryside Alliance said trail hunting contributes £100 million to the rural economy every year. Its chief executive, Tim Bonner, said at a time when the countryside is on its knees as a result of misguided government policies and a cost of living crisis heightened by war, the government has again chosen to attack rural communities with another assault on rural life. But Baroness Heyman said polling showed the majority of people living in rural communities supported a ban. She said the consultation was a genuine listening exercise and would look at elements including economy and community impacts. She said, "We know there are really strong feelings on both sides of this. One thing we want to do through the consultation is ensure any legislation is robust, enforceable and workable in practice." The League Against Cruel Sports said it had recorded 488 reports of foxes seen being pursued between August 2025 and March this year, and claimed that pre-laid trails were recorded being laid at only 4% of hunt meets attended by monitors. Emma Slavinsky, chief executive of the League Against Cruel Sports, said, "This consultation is the very welcome start of a process which should lead to more effective legislation, allowing the courts and police to tackle persistent and prolific illegal hunting, something the League has been lobbying many different governments for over many years. So-called trail hunting must be banned. The exemptions in the Hunting Act removed the end of so-called accidental hunting, and jail sentences introduced to act as a deterrent for those who would break new, stronger fox hunting laws. Three hunts currently operate in Norfolk: the Dunstan Harriers, West Norfolk and Waveney and North Norfolk Harriers.
New CCTV cameras have been installed at several locations on the coast to help combat antisocial behaviour. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has installed additional CCTV cameras at six local sites in a bid to boost safety. The locations are Caister Cemetery, Yarmouth Old Cemetery, Galston Old Cemetery, Priory Gardens, Beaconsfield Recreational Ground and Galston Bowls Club. A Facebook post from Great Yarmouth Borough Council said, following concerns raised by residents, we've installed additional CCTV cameras at several locations across the borough to help improve safety and deter antisocial behaviour. This is part of our ongoing work to help keep our communities safe, protect public spaces and discourage antisocial behaviour.
Well, that's it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, your newsreaders will be Margaret Two and Julie, so we look forward to your company for that. But in the meantime, we wish you a very happy Easter and a good week, hoping that you stay safe and well. So from all your friends at Grapevine, as usual, it's bye for now.